Another race in space begins as China sets its eyes on the moon. This is Brief Before Impact. Hey, welcome everyone. I am Matt Parker and thanks for joining me for this episode. Today's brief is going to be discussing the expansion of China's space capabilities and their desire to explore the moon for certain rare minerals. We're going to dive into where they've been progressing in the last few years to some recent developments as of the last week or so. And then lastly, we'll finish up the national security implications between China and the United States operating in the space domain. But before we get into it, let me take a quick ad break and then we will get to work. Hey, welcome back, everyone. I've got to give credit where credit is due. A dear friend and colleague, Andrew, pointed out this subject of China looking at the moon and developing mining operations in the future, unknown date, but in the future to mine certain rare minerals that could be used for potential energy needs. So I started diving into this. I found this quite interesting. And obviously, the implications between China and the United States regarding the minerals on the moon are vast. So let's kind of dive into first what China has been up to in the last few years with their space capabilities. And this is according to a report from Voice of America News. The goal of the mission that China has been on in the last several years is to extract 2 kilograms of sample from the moon's northern Mons Rümker region and bring it back to the Earth. So if the mission succeeds, China will join the U.S. and the former Soviet Union as the only countries to have collected lunar samples. Analysts say that the complexity of Chang-5's unmanned exploration mission, Chang-5's is China's missions to the moon, this shows the greatest progress of China's space capabilities and, if successful, will likely help Beijing realized future plans for manned moon landings and the construction of bases. Namrata Goswami, he's an Indian defense expert and now a space policy and geopolitical scholar living in the United States, he told Voice of America that the Chang-5 would allow China to advance, quote, their understanding of rendezvous and docking, especially when they are planning on human landing, end quote. So while reaching the moon remains a significant accomplishment for any space program, Beijing's space program is still in its early stages and still building experience. Quote, they're catching up to where the United States was in the 1960s, end quote, from Todd Harrison, Director of Defense Budget Analysis and Space Security at the Center for Strategic International Studies. The United States has already sent not just probes to the moon, but humans and returned to the Earth and brought samples of lunar rocks. So China is catching up in that respect, but they're still not where the United States is in terms of space technology. But it is nevertheless a competition for science, according to Harrison. So recently, some rare earth metals are considered strategically important because they are an integral part of the manufacturing of electronic devices, electronic vehicle batteries, and military equipment. Currently, more than 80% of U.S. rare earth imports come from China. So with that last data point, overwhelmingly, a majority of rare earth minerals come from China. They are looking to, as a nation, to further expand their abilities to bring rare minerals to the capabilities, particularly in the development and manufacturing of energy needs, whether that's through an electric vehicle battery, certainly military equipment. So this is where they've been growing the last few years in their capabilities and investing billions of dollars into. Now, this brings us to a recent news report as of a development that China has recently found a new lunar mineral, which led to them planning to launch 3 unmanned missions to the moon over the next decade, and it's seeking to rival the U.S. in the new era of space exploration. According to Bloomberg, that announcement came just a day after China said it discovered a new lunar mineral via samples retrieved by its Chang-5 mission. Named Changsite Y, it's described by the state-run Xinhua news agency as a kind of colorless, transparent columnar crystal. It's said to contain helium-3, an isotope that has been speculated as a future energy source. All right, so I'm going to describe to you how helium-3, its qualities and characteristics in the development of nuclear or energy source, this little part gets a little sciencey. Just stick with me because it overall does tell the story. Again, according to the report from News Atlas, helium-3 is thought of as a promising potential fuel for nuclear fusion. With two protons and just one neutron, it's unique as the only known stable isotope of any element that's got more protons than neutrons. So theoretically, deuterium and helium-3 fusion reaction, so combining these two elements, would liberate 164 megawatt hours of energy per gram of helium-3. So 164 megawatt hours of energy, a lot of energy, from just 1 gram of helium-3. And crucially, neither the helium-3 or its reaction products are radioactive, so they wouldn't turn reactor components into radioactive nuclear waste disposal headaches like the deuterium-tritium reactor will. So if you're following this so far, a lot of science words going on. You've got a tremendous amount of energy being produced from a very small amount of helium. More importantly, there is no essentially radioactive nuclear waste as the production of this energy is created. So continuing on, there are downsides of helium-3 fusion reactor. We'll need to operate at much higher temperatures than a tritium reactor, for example. And helium-3 is extremely rare and difficult to isolate on Earth. Indeed, the main way it's produced today is by waiting for tritium in nuclear warheads and related stockpiles to decay, then drawing it off in tiny amounts, totaling about 15 kilograms per year. That's about 33 pounds per year. It's naturally present in the Earth's atmosphere, but at a tiny 7.2 parts per trillion concentration. It's also present in primordial gases in the Earth's mantle, but generally inaccessible. So if you're tracking this so far, helium-3, a very powerful element that could create this fusion energy. However, it's very hard to find. This is probably where the moon exploration comes into play. Continue on, it's certainly of a great value since the United States has started using it in its neutron detectors scanning for nuclear materials at U.S. border crossings, vastly increasing demand and driving the price up accordingly. It's hit marks as high as $17,000 per gram in recent times, with demand expected to continue rising, which is why many analysts believe it's an excellent candidate for lunar mining. So the moon's surface, it's believed to contain as much as 1 million metric tons of helium-3. According to the International Policy Digest, that represents around $1.5 quadrillion worth of resources. Quadrillion dollars worth of resources. And an opportunity summarized by Yuan Zhiyuan, which is the head of the Chinese Lunar Exploration Program, as a transformational fusion energy opportunity. Direct quote, each year, three space shuttle missions could bring enough fuel for all human beings across the world, end quote. Now, of course, the cost involved in building a mining operation on the moon are astronomical. It wouldn't be a small operation either. The highest estimated concentrations of helium-3 in the lunar soil are around 50 parts per billion. So you'd likely need to process 150 tons of regolith to harvest a single gram of this valuable isotope. Then you need to get it back to Earth. It's itself no simple or cheap undertaking. So let's tie this together. A few years back, China started investing more into its space exploration program with the desire of assessing the moon for any type of rare minerals. It discovers recently this rare mineral that could be used for nuclear fusion. And it, as a nation, it doubles down on the next decade, sending three unmanned missions to the moon, likely to want to send manned missions to the moon in the years preceding that. Now, this all ties together in something I've talked about in the past before, which is kind of space as the last frontier for, you know, great competition. Obviously, any type of military conflicts or wartime will always exist on planet Earth. It's always going to be a part of it. However, as we further advance ourselves in technologies, particularly space technologies such as satellites, space is a finite resource in many regards. And now this new capability to perhaps mine a rare mineral for the use of energy production finds the moon to be very attractive in terms of a resource. And if anything, history has taught us, powers both big and small will fight over resources they find valuable. Which brings us to the national security implications. Reading a report from Lieutenant General Klotz, the Vice Commander, Air Force Space Command, he writes, direct quote, "In the face of potentially emerging threats, our fundamental U.S. position is straightforward, and our new national space policy lays it out very well, and I commend it for your reading. Let me try to summarize it in this way. We must ensure access to space, as it is critical to our nation's full range of capabilities, capabilities that transform the battlefield and empower the global economy. Indeed, the United States is committed to the free use and access to space by all nations for peaceful purposes. The reality is, however, we cannot assume all nations will pursue only peaceful purposes. Just the same, we cannot assume all nations will respect the domains of land, air, or sea. In light of this reality, we must protect our key capabilities. They are a vital national interest and one of our top priorities," end quote. In addition to that, there is a recent white paper from China indicating those plans to complete that space station by the end of this year. Beijing is also expected to launch as many as 40 space flights this year alone. China also reportedly called the U.S. irresponsible after a recent near miss between China's space station and two of Elon Musk's SpaceX satellites. Now, the U.S. still dominates the space landscape. However, this partnership is incredible, and that leadership will erode over time if we fall victim to any type of partisanship gains. Now, Lieutenant General Saltzman, the Space Force's Deputy Chief of Operations, Nuclear and Cyber, recent bolstered a point that about the intersection of space exploration and national security, and he drew a parallel with the current information war around Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Direct quote, "If you do not have control of space and cyber, forget about Taiwan. If you do not own the information space, forget about Ukraine." Again, that's according to Lieutenant General Chan Saltzman, the Space Force's Deputy Chief of Operations. So let me close out on this kind of brief episode on the future implications. Let's think about this in more of a macro terms. In the last couple of years, dealt with a global pandemic that's affected every country differently, but we've all been affected. Russia's invasion recently of Ukraine, aggressive tensions between China and Taiwan. Here on Earth, there's plenty to go on that our leaders are dealing with, mostly of a geopolitical nature, between great power competition between ourselves, China, Russia, and the like. The challenge we face with space is that there are so many unknowns. You're almost writing the rules as you go because everything is kind of new. Yes, we've been exploring space since the 60s, but warfare, just as between warring nations, has been going on for centuries. So we more or less have that one felt out and how it will be handled between competing powers. The challenge with space is that the rules have not been written, and more importantly, in my mind, the implications are unknown. Whether it's a SpaceX satellite running into a Chinese satellite, is this a U.S. versus China, or China versus Elon Musk, who's a private citizen, and that's his private company? How and where does the overlap occur between commercial operations, like SpaceX, for example, and national security operations led by the U.S. government? And how does that affect our desire to deter any type of military conflict in the space domain when the United States claims to be for the peaceful purposes for all nations in the use of space? This is certainly a challenging atmosphere to be competing with China and other powers in space for. And we can only imagine how the United States should pursue any type of future policy, especially dealing with these more aggressor nations who are looking to exploit for their own national interest the unique nature of the space domain. I imagine the United States should always take the more proactive approach, and rather than catching itself on its heels when it comes to dealing with any threat, I certainly believe that about space. So thanks for tuning in for this quick episode. I hope you found this interesting and informative. And as always, I hope you pick up what I'm putting down I am Matt Parker. This is Brief Before Impact.